Well, hello there, listener, and welcome to episode 78 of Good Copy, Bad Copy, the B2B copywriting podcast. This month, we're talking about, and brace yourself for this, maths. No, wait, come back, because statistics do play a big part in persuasive B2B content. And we're going to be talking to Lucy Rycroft-Smith from Cambridge University about how we can all get a bit better at handling numbers effectively as part of our B2B content. My name's David Maguire. I'm creative director at Redix Communications, and I'm here with our founder and CEO, Fiona Campbell-Howes.
Hello.
Hi, Fiona. Are you prepared?
I'm quite apprehensive because I understand there's going to be a test.
There is. There is. I mentioned this to you. I don't think I've ever seen you react with such fear.
That's right. Yes, I am quite worried about how that's going to go, but let's see.
So, do you find that you notice when people get maths things wrong in B2B content and marketing content generally?
Sometimes I notice it and sometimes I don't, I think. But when I notice it, I do get quite irritated about it. And I have brought an example.
Oh, yeah, go ahead.
It's not B2B. It's B2C. It's from a bank, and it's from my bank. To me.
And if someone, like, there's anyone you want to get numbers right, it's a bank, right?
Exactly. And the reason I was upset about this is because I think this is intentionally misleading. And it's about the euphemistic change in interest rates that they're going to apply to my cash ISA.
So I'm already... Change with air quotes.
Yeah, I'm already a little bit, you know, hackles up because change, it means they're going to bring the interest rate down on this ISA. And so here they are with the table saying, here's your current rate, 0.85%, already not brilliant. And here's your new rate, 0.55%. And the percentage change on that, they tell me, is minus 0.3% change in that rate. And I thought, that's not right. So I go to my favourite website, which is percentagecalculator.co.nz. For anybody that has trouble with percentages. And I find out that the actual change is minus 35%. So they've actually cut the rate by 35%, and they're trying to tell me they've cut it by 0.3%, and I think that's misleading and they've done it on purpose.
Yes, they've got percentage points mixed up with percentages.
That's exactly it, yes. Yeah, and that is something I think we do see a lot, and it is disappointing to see.
It happens a lot. I mean, we'll hear in the interview in a minute with Lucy, but one of the things that I spotted was a thing from a big CRM company where they'd done that exact thing, and they'd gone, oh, this is a 20% increase in the percentage rate. It's like, no.
Yeah. I think it's quite common. And I think, you know, sometimes, you know, we've had, well, for myself, we've had writers through here that, you know, don't always know the difference between percentage and percentage points. And, you know, that's something that you have to be aware of in your own copy. And, you know, if you're responsible for training other writers, that should form part of the training, definitely.
Because, I mean, we think of writers as being words people. But unless you are getting numbers and statistics and data straight through from, you know, product sheets or whatever and putting them straight in, working out what those numbers actually mean, that is on us. I mean, there's no one else to do that job, right?
Absolutely. And our job is to, you know, communicate clearly and accurately. And if we aren't sure ourselves of what we're saying, then we can't be doing that job properly.
So good thing that we're talking to Lucy in a moment. She's going to tell us how to do all of that. I mean, do you feel confident about your ability to, I mean, there are things like percentages, but then, you know, to look at I know you'd love a spreadsheet.
I do love a spreadsheet.
But to look at a spreadsheet and actually work out what the story is in the numbers.
I think so, because I look at a lot of spreadsheets. And in fact, I mean, I am quite a tragic individual in that, you know, I manage the business here at Redix. We have a lot of spreadsheets. I spend a lot of time staring at them, looking for those patterns and looking for those trends. So yes, I think I do like looking at data like that in spreadsheets and looking for patterns in it, yes.
I think we must be a nightmare for all those SaaS companies that are like, you know, their new business technology is like, stop running your business on spreadsheets, do this instead.
That's
and
right,
you're like,
yes.
You can have my spreadsheet and prize them from my cold, dead hands.
Do as we say, not as we do.
I used to go, I mean, certainly when I was writing more PR content, you know, in the days before content marketing, I would have almost a handy list of things that I could say, well, this is the weight of so many bull elephants, or this is the length of so many double-decker buses.
Yes, or, the area the size of Wales.
Or this is equivalent. I could tell you anything. You know, any amount of fluid was immediately in Olympic swimming pools.
Yeah, which I mean, and that's really nice, and that works really well, because that is just a way for people to visualize it in their minds, which is easier for people to do than just looking at a lot of numbers.
But as the writer, I had to do that job myself.
Right.
You know, that's the thing. There's no one else to give me that information. You know, and if my maths were bad, then probably all that stuff was wrong. We'll maybe find out in a minute.
Maybe we will.
I mean, it was quite interesting. I mean, do you find that copywriters shy away from numbers? You were saying, you know, we've had people that when they arrived here...
Yes. You know, sometimes, yes, you have to kind of impress upon people the difference between, specifically that, between percentages and percentage points. I do find that we, and I count myself among them, shy away a little bit from the numbers because... most of us have got an arts background or a humanities background of some sort. I mean, I did maths to O level, but no further. But then that's also true of English, so there you go. You know, I certainly find things like the concept of a billion, I'm lost.
A billion is just huge.
It's just huge. I don't know what that means. I can't visualize it. Once you get beyond the millions, then I struggle and I have to kind of rely on what the client's telling me. So, yes, I think writers, not just myself, do shy away a little bit from maths, yeah. So we could all do with getting better at it, which is, I think, what Lucy's going to help us
with. In a moment, we'll be talking about it, exactly that, and then we will put our own skills to the test. And the listener can join in too, as Lucy set us some questions. I think they're about percentages, which I'm sure will delight you.
Yeah, I don't have access to percentagecalculator.co.nz, so we'll see how
we do. Before that, though, I will just mention that voting is now open for the best B2B content of 2019. There's a link in the show notes and also on the Radix website. And if you go to our Twitter at RadixCom, that's RADIXCOM, you'll find it there too. So head on over, cast your vote and have your say on which pieces of content we'll be talking about in the roundup next month. As we've already discussed, as copywriters talk a lot about words, but how confident are we when we have to present the numbers to back up our case? So I went to the offices of the Times Educational Supplement and talked to their podcast host, the Cambridge University mathematician and educator Lucy Ryecroft-Smith. And I asked her, why is math so scary?
I mean, my answer is that it isn't that scary, but that's so unhelpful. Isn't it, to say that? I think it's like I was teaching for a very long time, not that long, about 10 years, and you'd always have kids who were horrible for other people and really good for you, and they'd come into the staff room and say, oh God, is that a horrible lesson with so-and-so? And you go, oh, they're fine for me. And it's like so unhelpful to say that. So to say that maths isn't scary to me does not help you if you're scared of it, right? The reason that most people are scared of maths is because, A, it's really hard. It just is. It's not harder than other subjects, but it is hard. Thinking's hard, reasoning's hard, and that's an important part of maths. But B, so many people have been traumatised by it. True story. And if you are listening and you feel like you have had an abusive relationship with maths, you're not alone. So many people.
If you're a bit affected by any of the issues in this podcast.
I'm not even joking. That there's a real thing, there's a real condition called maths anxiety. So many people, once you start talking to them at parties about maths, I mean, they run away, but before they run away, they say, I've had such a horrible time with maths and I hate maths and this is the reason. And it's one or two incidents often where they were just put on the spot and anxiety got the better of them. And that was it after that. You know, it just builds up after that.
Is it like the right answer, wrong answer thing that people... They feel like they're going to get caught out.
Yeah, I think, and that's partly because some people, you know, it's insecurity, isn't it? If you do find that maths comes relatively easy to you early on, and it might just be computational arithmetic stuff that comes easy to you, then you might actually, that insecurity means that then you are saying, oh, it's really easy and it's fine and I can do it. And then people who don't feel that way kind of get this fear. And then kids who are really, really good at maths look down on other kids who aren't as good as maths, and they're this sort of big chasm opens up. And that happens, you know, with adults too, in this level upon level of snobbery then intervenes. So that if you don't get everything straight away and you're not a genius, then you're bad. You know, it's like one or the other.
And it's funny when you say as adults, because I think the older I get, the less I want to do maths. You know, I'm so sorry. That's a really, you know, that's a bad thing to say to a maths educator. But the older I get, the more I worry. You know, the further I am away from school, and the more kind of I feel out of practice.
Yeah, I mean, that obviously depends on your definition of what maths is,
right?
And I would wager that you're doing a lot of it without necessarily knowing or feeling like that fits your definition of what maths is. I have a very broad church definition of maths.
Right.
And it's quite creative and interesting and varied. And so, you know, I think when you're building stuff with Lego, you're probably doing maths.
I tend not to build that many things with Lego.
Okay,
these days.
All right. I bet though you do more maths than you think. And the reason I'm fairly sure of that is because I, as part of my job, interview a lot of people about using maths in their career. And it almost always starts with, well, I'm a midwife, I'm a plumber, I don't use much maths. And by the end they go, oh, no, yeah, actually, oh, you're right, no, I do. Yeah, no, that thing that I do all day, actually, that probably is maths. It's just maybe not school maths or what I traditionally thought of as maths.
So, and you've got, copywriters and marketers listening to this podcast,
sure,
who are going to be saying, yeah, but I'm a words person. I do words. Someone else does the numbers.
Yeah.
Do you find, you're a writer and a mathematician, so you're right in the middle of that Venn diagram there, maths.
I mean, every time you think about something as a Venn diagram representation, you are doing math. That is set theory. It's also really hard maths.
Oh, wow, cool.
So, congratulations.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay, so Venn diagrams, that's cool. But anyway, words people and numbers people.
All right. So
is that a lie or is it a thing?
Very, very lucky when I was much younger to read a book called The Maths Gene by Keith Devlin, which is an amazing book. And it basically completely debunks this idea that people are born good at maths or not good at maths. And actually, language is the thing. And maths is a language. And so this whole, I know, right? Oh, mind blown. So this whole thing about, are you good at languages or are you good at sciences and maths, is absolutely rubbish. Maths is about representing ideas. And if you are good at writing, and obviously nobody's born good at writing either, you pick it up through various, you know, skills and hard work and all that stuff. If you're interested in language and representation, that's the same thing as maths to me. It's not a different thing. It's just a category problem.
But equally, you know, there are marketers who, for their job, probably should pay more attention to maths.
Everyone should, all the time.
Than they do. I mean, one of the things that we were talking about, and it must be a real problem for you. For me, I get annoyed when I see like percentages that are wrong in marketing materials, for example. You know, and the other day I was looking at one from, won't say who, but a really massive CRM software company, and the percentages in their marketing content were wrong. As far as I know, not a mathematician, but I'm guessing they were wrong.
When you say wrong, give me a sense of the error that it might have been.
So I think they said it was an equivalent of the a percentage had increased, or the success rate had increased from 40% to 60%.
Yeah.
So that's a 20% increase.
Ah, okay.
I'm kind of, I'm sure that's a 50% increase.
Right. Well, I mean, what you're talking about, though, is really sophisticated. It's percentages of percentages.
Which happens all the time in marketing, though,
God,
right?
God, I mean, I don't even know where to start with that. That's really complex. It's really, really complex. Okay. Yeah, I mean, I don't get frustrated by bad maths in the same way, but I think that's because, and I, you know, I'm a writer too, so I'm a pedant, it's true, but I've been through the process of understanding that communication is a relationship between, you know, the person who's intending something and the person receiving it. And just because you intend something a certain way doesn't mean somebody receives it a certain way, right? And there isn't just one way to do everything. And
except maths.
No, not maths at all. Just the same as grammar. You know, right. we might feel like, you know, we can get a B in our bonnet about your and your as much as we like. But there were times in history when things mm-hmm. were slightly different.
Yep.
And there are times and places in the world where people use language differently. And they communicate perfectly well. And kind of getting pedantic about it somewhere is betraying a sense of snobbery about, you know, that your way is the only way. And communication cannot be like that, because that's not what communication is. And maths is the same, right? So whilst, yes, you could say the way that those people are using percentages, it might be misleading, it might engender all kinds of confusion in people. Actually, maths itself, the way that people use percentages, even when correct, even when straightforward, engenders all kinds of confusion anyway. So the right wrong thing maybe isn't the thing to focus on there.
Oh.
It's more about simplicity and clarity between you and your audience.
Right. So are there elements of it that are not only just kind of reached this zen state where apostrophes don't bother you and inconsistencies over decimal places and I don't know, significant figures don't bother you?
I can't say they don't bother me, but after a long time teaching students and teaching very nervous adults and trying to, I guess, spread the word about maths being interesting and creative and fun and human, you cannot square that maths pun with the idea that maths is always right, wrong, and if you do it wrong, it's going to irritate me. Because I'm introducing an affective part here where I'm saying, well, you've emotionally upset me, you've disappointed me. Like, why would you introduce that negativity into that relationship when you're trying to make out that maths is great and fun? Like, you can't just constantly go, well, you've messed it up now and, you know, I'm cross. Because what's the point?
Okay, so what's a more appropriate way to put it? Because I, you know, what I don't want to do is, you know, is say to the marketers and the copywriters yeah. that are listening, when it comes to your marketing materials and numbers, just be like wildly impressionistic.
Yeah, no, that's okay. All right, I feel
so,
you.
So, what would be helpful? You know, I mean, I keep seeing things like this is 10 times smaller than that.
Yeah,
and I go, can something be 10 times smaller, or is it just yeah. a tenth of the size of?
But yeah, I mean, the thing is, the language is imprecise, right?
Right.
And it always will be. And actually, we've got to remember that statistics are imprecise. We think they aren't. And so I don't know if you've come across the term math washing, which is quite nice and might Ooh. Be. Yeah, I thought you'd like that one. So the idea that you can take something that fundamentally is about human judgment and bias, which is everything, and then you put this facade of maths in front of it, or statistics, and suddenly it's neutral and impartial and very, very important and rational, right? Even though 14% of people liked my thing. Well, actually, I maybe only asked a few people and rounded up or down, or I specifically said to them, do you really, really, really like my thing, or... and didn't give them any other options, right? So the human element there gets completely covered over with the mathiness of it. So that idea of math washing is a really interesting one to think about. I don't like it when people intentionally mislead. I really don't. That does annoy me. And particularly companies, like individuals, and of course companies are made of individuals, but really big companies who should know better and intentionally mislead. In essence, the whole of the female cosmetics industry, I am very annoyed at. Yes.
Oh, yes. Yes, 82% yeah. of the six people we asked said that they would absolutely pay £1 million for this product.
Yes, and they are guilty of almost all of the errors that one can make. And mostly, as far as I can tell, intentionally, because they keep getting pulled up on them and then they just do it again. So, you know.
Well, our listeners are B2B marketers.
Yes,
we're business
okay,
to business.
Yeah, I got it.
So we definitely don't do that.
Okay.
And when those things are there, they're accidental.
Good.
So,
okay.
So yeah. what should writers and marketers
yeah.
who are doing maths, using maths in the marketing, mm-hmm. using numbers, what should they avoid doing, and what would be good things for them to do?
Okay, so what's really interesting, so in my work, in my day-to-day job at Cambridge, what I'm looking at is mathematical concepts and really getting inside them. How do they work? So the thing with percentages is they're really, really hard. And if you struggle with percentages and find them confusing, first of all, you're definitely not alone. They're really difficult. And often when we teach them at school, we kind of gloss over lots of important things that actually are so fundamental. If you haven't grasped it by the time you're an adult, I'm not surprised you don't understand them. So the thing with percentages is this is about proportional reasoning. It's about a multiplicative relationship, right? I'm already using long words here, right?
Yes.
And fundamentally, it's about things that are scaling. Mm-hmm. Okay, so I have to have a base, like an original unit thing, right? And that unit thing has to stay the same. And then I can scale up and I can scale down. But if I change the unit, fundamentally, there's going to be a problem with the percentage.
Right.
So that's when you come to do the questions, little hint there, that's something Ooh. You might want to bear in mind for that, right? And so because percentages are fundamentally about comparing across things, I'm trying to keep my unit the same so that I can compare things, they're not actually suitable for everything. And we do tend to use them a lot, when actually, as you've suggested, they might not be the most useful tool. You can say things like this much bigger. You can just use actual numbers.
So is there something that people can use that is better than percentages? Or is there a rule of thumb for when a percentage is a good thing to use or a bad thing to use?
So give me the sort of scenario, because this is your world, right?
Okay.
This is your expertise.
Right. So say you'd reduce the amount of time to complete an order of components mm-hmm. from 7 weeks to 5 weeks.
Yep. What's the problem with saying I've reduced it from 7 weeks to 5 weeks? That's the first question you've got to ask yourself.
I guess the reason people would go for a percentage there is that I don't know what percentage that is, but it's a big number. I'm guessing it's like it's going to be getting on for 40-something percent.
Quite a lot, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
yeah, and which just makes it sound like a lot.
Yeah, so there's my question to you is, are you trying to mislead?
No, I think it's trying to convey the size of the change, I think.
Can you draw an infographic?
I can't. I could probably ask someone who can draw.
Honestly, this is about communication. So right. fundamentally, you know, you and I are on the same page here. You're trying to communicate something. The maths should be a tool for that. I think there is a point at which, yes, it's about trying to persuade, trying to use it to show things in their best light, and that's absolutely fine. But this is really fuzzy boundary with actually just trying to mislead and trying to, in some sense, make something a bit more opaque. Like, mm-hmm. if you've gone from a particular amount of weeks to another amount of weeks, is there a good reason why you're not just using what we would call the absolute values, right? Mm-hmm. Rather than trying to make a comparison using a ratio, like, you know, like a percentage. Mm-hmm. And if, you know, if you're convinced that actually the percentage is doing a job and you're happy to articulate what the job is, I think that's absolutely fine. It also depends on what the starting unit was and whether there's any amount of being disingenuous about that. Like, were you trying at the beginning? You know, what is this an actual, you know, I guess in research we'd call this like, is the experimental setup a true experiment? If you started with something where you are not trying to make it particularly good or bad, it just is, and then you've made one change, and then the thing that's changed has had an effect. So I'm starting to get into statistical methods here, which is quite complex, right? But there's so many levels of misleading with statistics. There's so many points at which you could make decisions that might not even be intentional, but actually are really misleading.
Okay. So if somebody wants to bring some intellectual rigor to what they're doing.
Yes.
So that what they're saying is, you know, it helps the reader to get a picture.
Yes.
Helps them to understand, you know, what they're trying to get across without misleading them. But they're doing that in an appropriate way.
You said the word picture. Draw a graph. Draw a chart. Draw an infographic. That's my absolute top tip, because humans are really, really good at comparing these visually. As long as it's correct, and I will give a word of warning there, because when you're drawing any kind of graphical representation, especially when you're comparing things, there is a big trap to fall into, and that's dimension. So you've got line, you've got area, you've got volume. God, if please don't do a 3D pie chart. Please, just for the love of God, don't. But the idea being that if I'm comparing something on a page which is 2D with my eye, it should not be 3D, because that is messing up the dimensions. And if you're looking to make a graph of me comparing two areas, they should be areas. It shouldn't be like the length scale rather than the area scale. Does that make sense? Yeah.
Yes, I think so.
Okay. I probably haven't explained that very well.
Yes. I mean, it's a visual thing.
It's a visual
on an audio medium, but we'll see how we go.
But honestly, I find that if you can use graphical methods, that's usually a really good way to do it, provided you do it in a way that isn't misleading.
Right. So if someone wants to get better at doing this
yes.
stuff, how can they get better at doing this stuff quickly?
Because luckily, there's loads of people who are already in this area that are much better than I am. So I will mention one of my colleagues at Cambridge, David Spiegelhalter, is professor of, now let's see if I get this right, I think it is the public understanding of risk and uncertainty, something like that. So you may have heard of him because he has written a few books. One, the most recent, is called The Art of Statistics. But he also made some comments about how often people have sex, and the media went wild. It was something that I think people have sex more than they watch Game of Thrones or something. It was really interesting. Anyway, so you might have heard of him on that basis. But I promise you, he also talks about other stuff, which is he particularly is really passionate about good stats in writing, journalism, business. And so he has a blog, and he is also internationally speaking and generally writing about this sort of thing. So you can look him up. He has a good website called understandinguncertainty.org. And as I said, he's written various books. There's a really good Stats for Journalists course by the Royal Statistical Society, which is about half an hour, and it's excellent. I definitely recommend that. So if you just look up the Royal Statistical Society Stats Life Statistics for Journalists, I think it's called, and definitely have a look at that. And then loads of books. There's loads of really interesting books. I know you want a quick fix. I mean, books for me are a quick fix because they're also fun.
Books are great.
I'm going to recommend a couple of them because they're also really interesting. So you've got something like The Maths of Life and Death by Kit Yates, which is about when those sorts of statistics are life-changing decisions,
mm-hmm.
which is amazing and really interesting. That's quite recent. And then I read one last year called The Perils of Perception by Bobby Duffy, which is really interesting, and only really tangentially another maths poem related to this, which is about he went around the world and asked loads of people questions and internationally, and then he drew graphs of what they said compared to reality, and he talks about the ways that people underestimate answers to questions and why, and it's amazing
because it all bumps into heuristics and decision-making and behavioural economics and all of that fun stuff.
See how we started with you asking about being scared of maths and we're ending? You're so excited and thrilled and full of joy because maths is great.
Yeah. Yeah, of course it is.
Yeah,
All right. Lucy, if people want to hear more from you, to follow your exploits and your adventures, and to learn stuff...
You better like feminist rants, that's what I'm saying.
Who doesn't like a feminist rant?
Cool, okay. So if you want to hear me talking about maths, but also all kinds of other stuff, feminism, pockets, a lot about pockets, or education, gender, policy, you can just Google me if you want to, but also I have a book which is called Flip the System UK Teachers Manifesto, which came out about 2 years ago, and then my new book, which is out in December, which is called The Equal Classroom: Life-Changing Thinking About Gender, which is part rant. There's a lot of rant in it, but also part research.
Thanks, Lucy, for your time and wisdom. That was more fun than talking about maths had any right to be. We'll definitely put all the relevant links in the show notes to help us get up to speed. Fiona, was there much there you found helpful? Are you still feeling nervous about the impending maths challenge?
I feel a little bit reassured that people like Lucy aren't judging my every calculation. That was great. So yeah, thanks very much, Lucy, for that. That was really enjoyable. I did not think it was going to be, but it was.
Okay, but now the fun stops. because Lucy has prepared for us three maths questions. They're for you, Fiona, for me, and the listener. We can all have a go at them to test how good we are at percentages. Are you ready?
Yes, I am reluctantly ready, yes.
Okay, I gather they're in ascending order of difficulty, so let's see how we get on.
So, shall we see if you've been paying attention? I've written three challenging questions for you on percentages, starting with the easier of the three, although they're not easy at all. Okay, so these are some of the most common mistakes that people make when they are thinking about percentages. Question number one,
I saw some lovely pairs of braces in a shop with 20% off. I thought, so cheap, I'll buy two. Which is two pairs, technically four braces, but, you know, they're like trousers. They're like a plural tantum, so two pairs of braces at 20% off. What percentage was taken off the two of them together on the final bill?
Okay, Fiona, have you got your answer written down?
Oh, yes. Yes, I do.
Okay, good stuff. Let's go on to the next one.
Question number two, slightly harder. You see a beautiful pair of galoshes marked down in the summer sale. Originally priced at £50, they have had 30% taken off and a further 10% off in the final reduction Blue Cross extravaganza. How much do they cost now?
Oof. Okay, we're frantically scribbling. Okay, I think I have an answer for that one. How are you getting on, Fiona?
I have an answer.
Yeah, yes. How confident are you?
Reasonably. About 50%.
Right. Okay, let's go with number three.
And final question. My wife came home from a shopping trip with a tie she bought me at 70% off. I only paid £30 for it, she tells me. How much was the tie originally?
Okay, I think I'm confident on that one. I think I got that one straight away, so I'm probably got it wrong.
I've got no idea. So I'm going to make something up for that one.
Okay.
Okay, are you ready for some answers? So first question was about some braces in a shop, 20% off both of them. And I thought I'd buy two. And so I asked you what percentage was taken off the two of them together on the final bill.
Right. We think still 20%. Is that right? That's what we think.
I'm pretty sure that that's 20%, yes.
Okay, let's see.
This one sometimes fools people into thinking percentages work additively and cumulatively, i.e. if you buy two things at 20% off, you'll end up getting 40% off in total. But if you think about what would happen if that were true and I bought five pairs, you might see where the error is. If it keeps on adding up, at some point, not only would I get them for free, they would be paying me to take them away, which might be true with braces, but we'll see. Actually, percentages are specifically constructed to remain stable throughout addition. So however many items I buy in this 20% sale, I'll always get 20% off. That won't ever change, although the amount itself will. So that's like saying I can take 20% off each individual item at the till, or I can total them up first and then do it at the end, and it will still give me the same answer. So we can try that if you want. So if you imagine everything in the shop is now £1, and we bought 50 items, so each one, if we take 20% off, will now be 80p. And 80p multiplied by 50 is £40. So I checked that in my head by thinking, yeah, it should be a little bit less than 50. Yeah, that's right. So an 8 and a 5, something around 40, it's probably not 400. It's definitely not £4. £40 is good. So then we'll try adding them up first. So 50 lots of £1, £50. Taking 20% off that, yep, £40. So the answer to the original question, 20%.
Right, wow, that was very in-depth, and we got it right.
Yes.
One. Listener, if you're keeping score, you have to have got one there to keep up with us. Okay, let's question two.
Okay, let's think about question two. So this is my lovely pair of galoshes, or yours rather, sorry. And you saw them in the sale, originally priced at £50. They've had 30% off and a further 10% off in the final reduction. How much do they cost now?
Now... What answer did you think you get for this?
I think I get £30 because I think it's 20% off the original amount and 10% off the original amount, which I make 30, which I make come out to £30.
Okay,
but my maths could just be wrong in the in what is 30% of 50.
Yeah, yeah. I took the extra 10% off the new figure rather than off the original figure. So yeah. I ended up with I think £31.50.
Okay, yes. See, I thought about that and then I dismissed it and I did it the other way.
Right. So one of us is right. I don't know what shops do.
To the shop's policy.
Yeah. You know,
is it like an extra 10% off the original price or is it 10% off the reduced price?
Yeah, I'd like it if it was the former. That would be simpler. But yeah, I went for £31.50. You went for £30. Let's see how we get on.
So this is about how percentages relate to one another. And sometimes people add them together. They think 30% plus 10% should equal 40% off, right? And that's a perfectly sensible thing to do, in a sense, because it feels like you have this adding sort of situation, one thing and another thing put together. And of course, it would work for amounts. So if you had the kind of £5 off every time you spend £30, that would work. But the reason this doesn't work for percentages is because percentages are about scaling up or down from a particular starting point. And here the starting point has changed halfway through, like moving the goalposts. The first reduction is 30% off from £50, which can be found if you think about 10% off is £5 and do it three times, £15. So don't forget to subtract from the original amount. So you've got £15 off your original price, £50. That leaves you with a galosh price of £35. There are tons of other ways to do this. Great if you didn't. Maths is creative. Woo! But if we think about the further reduction, so this 10% off, it's not a percentage off £50 anymore. The starting point or the base is different. So we need to take 10% off £35, not £50. That's £3.50 off, leaving us with £31.50. That's actually a bit less than 40% off, because the thing that we were reducing got a bit smaller in the middle of the calculation. We can work out exactly how different that is to 40%. If you imagine my galoshes were £100, so this is nice to do with percentages because it's easier to see, 30% off, they're now £70. If I take another 10% off, they're now £63. So actually, because we started with exactly 100, the same as percent out of 100, we can see that we reduced the price by 100 minus 63%. So that's 37%. So it's a bit less than 40%, just as we suspected. This actually used to happen quite a lot when I worked in retail. I used to actually see people do this often, this particular mistake. And so I've had much practice at explaining why this doesn't work.
Whoa, oh. So you got that one right. Oh. I was wrong.
Yes, I'd have been gutted if I'd have got, you know, worked out 10% of 35 wrong or taken got £3.50 away from 35. But yeah, no, that's good. So I'm 2 for 2, but as you said, your way of doing it is really, really common in retail, as you suspected it might be.
Yes. Well, my way was the easy way, but the incorrect way. Yes. I mean, we've all learned a lesson there.
Okay. Third question, the one about the tie.
Okay. Third question is really hard. But I really, really enjoy these sorts of questions, and I'll explain why in just a moment. So this is my wife coming home from a shopping trip with a tie, and she bought it at 70% off, and she only paid £30 for it. How much was it originally?
Right, so I can't work this out at all, but you said this was really easy.
I got this.
So I
got an answer quickly. Whether it's the right answer, I don't know.
Yeah, so based on the fact that you thought this was really easy and you didn't really have to do any thinking about it, I do have an answer.
Go on.
which would be, what was it? It was £30 with 70% off, so it must have been £100 to start with.
Exactly. I think if it was 70% off and you're left with 30, it's only because it's a round number. If it was like 50, I'd have been baffled, but I kind of figured, well, yeah, if you take 70% off £100, you've got £30 left.
Yes.
So it must be the original price of the tie. What a tie! Buy a tie for £100.
£100 tie, yes.
Yes. Yeah. But I think this is a £100 tie.
Yeah, I think I agree with you.
Let's see if we get on.
So, if you found 70% of £30, which is £21, and then added it back on to get £51, that's a very, very common answer. And again, not at all an unreasonable thing to do. But if we look at our answer, original price, £51, new price, £30, it seems like it's not quite right. Because half price would be just over £25, and ours is bigger than that, and it's supposed to be 70% off. So W2F is going on. So It's that sort of fundamental idea of percentages again, the starting point or the base. And we've calculated based on the new price, the sale price, as our base, and we've gone backwards. And that's the error. We actually need to find the starting price, the non-sale price, and go forwards. But that's the thing we don't know. Life is terrible and I'm stuck. What shall we do now? The thing that will save us here, and I promise this is a knight on horseback situation, not like a gremlin under the bed. I'm going to say the word, it's algebra. Yeah, exciting. So, if you thought, oh God, algebra is something I left behind a long time ago and I never ever want to hear it again, hold on, hold on. This is amazing. It's really exciting. Algebra just lets us put a placeholder in for the thing we don't know and work with it, right? So, if you're a writer, which I presume you are, you know all about putting placeholders in for the things you don't know and working with it. So, let's call the thing we don't know something. Now, again, if you've been scarred by algebra, so many people have, you might be thinking, if we start talking X's and Y's, I'm out of here. Sure. I'm going to call it, right? So I promise no X's, no Y's, just... So the thing I don't know is... And we know that thing was sold at 70% off. So 30% of is £30. Right, it would be really, really easy to make a mistake here, I think, by writing 70% instead of 30%. Because it was 70% off. That means I can be smart here, actually, and write 30% of the start price instead to save me taking anything away at the end. But you can do it that way. It's fine. But here's what we're sure of. I'll say it again. 30% of is £30. Okay, so are we okay with saying 30% is the same as multiplying by 0.3? Check that for a minute. You're happy with that? Because you could press times 30% on a calculator if you're used to doing that, or times 30 divided by 100. But hopefully you can see that's the same calculation as multiplying by 0.3. So we have 0.3 times is equal to £30. How do I find? Are you there before me? I can do the opposite of multiplying to the other thing, the other side of the equation, right? If I divide £30 by 0.3, and you can do it on a calculator if you wish, you can do it in your head, whatever you like, I promise you'll get your original price. Okay, so feel free to use a calculator. Answer, magically, £100. Woo! And if we think about it, it kind of makes sense that £30 is 30% of £100. Yay us! So again, go back, always go back to the question and go, well, does that make sense? And I think it does here. I think you can start to rationalise that that falls into place and it feels like the right answer. Your spidey sense, hopefully, will also tell you when you get something wrong and you think, well, that doesn't quite chime. So if you got any of those questions right, or indeed did some of the important reasoning in the middle, regardless of whether you did or not, excellent work, because some of this stuff is really complex. But I think it's really interesting. Yay!
Yay indeed. Thanks, Lucy.
Wow, because the calculation I was trying to do was completely different from that and much more complicated. So thank you, Lucy, for explaining it.
She's made it seem almost quite simple.
Yes, yes, absolutely.
And yeah, thanks, Lucy, for going to all of the trouble of recording those questions and explanations for us. How did that feel?
My heart's really beating. It's like, oh no, this is like being back in a math test.
Oh no.
So I think if that had just been me on my own, I'd have got 1 out of 3. Because you were here and I got some cues off you from the last one, I got 2 out of 3.
Whew, and with that, it is time for us to escape safely back to the world of words.
Phew!
Phew, indeed. Remember, listener, we want your vote in the B2B content poll, so give that a click as soon as you finish this. If there's any comment you'd like to make on any of the contenders, or even if you'd just like to wish us a Merry Christmas, you can send us a quick voice memo to podcast@radix-communications.com, or you can find us on Twitter @radixcom, or sign up for our monthly copywriting advice at radix-communications.com/insights. Until next time, remember, there are 10 types of people in the world, those who understand binary and those who don't. Bye!
Goodbye.